Good afternoon. This is Michael Ostrlenk with The Medical Entrepreneur, a project of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And today I'm with Brian Walsh. He's a senior legal research fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and he also runs the Overcriminalization Workgroup. And besides running the Overcriminalization Workgroup, he has a recent book out on overcriminalization entitled One Nation Under Arrest: How Crazy Laws, Rogue Prosecutors, and Activist Judges Threaten Your Liberties. He edited it with Paul Rosenzweig, with an introduction by Edwin Meese. Brian, it's good to have you on.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be here.
Tell us a little first about your work as a senior legal research fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage before we get into the Overcriminalization Work Group.
Well, our center focuses on a wide range of legal and constitutional issues, everything from immigration to the role of judges, to the civil justice reform, tort reform, medical malpractice reform, and criminal law justice issues, and also issues involving separation of powers and the war on terror, just a very wide range. My work and specifically focuses mostly on criminal justice reform, particularly at the federal level.
So a lot of those issues that you all work on would be of great interest to our doctors, just in the practice of medicine itself. And then their interest is constitutionalists as well. So I encourage them to check out your website. What is the website for your center at Heritage?
Well, the main Heritage website is heritage.org, and then they would look for the Rule of Law page, scroll down and look for the Rule of Law page, and almost all of the work that our center does will fall under the Rule of Law initiative. So that would be where they would find our papers and more materials about what it is that we do.
Great. Well, one of your projects at Heritage is that you founded and run the Overcriminalization Working Group, which AAPS is a member of. Tell us a little bit about the Overcriminalization Work Group, your intentions, a little bit of history.
Well, the goal of the working group is to have a range of individuals and organizations who span the political and ideological spectrum who want to get together and begin to influence, and have been getting together for a while, I should say, and influencing the federal lawmaking process on criminal justice issues. In particular, we're focused on vague, overly broad laws that don't include adequate protections for the innocent, such as doctors who might make a mistake in their billing practices and end up getting prosecuted as criminals, even though they never intended to violate the law. Those are the types of things that we're concerned about. There's been an explosion of that type of law over the last several decades, and it's not only in the statutory code, it's also in the regulations. So there are literally tens of thousands of federal criminal offenses that you or I might be engaged in our professions and not even know that we are violating, and if a federal prosecutor targets us, then we could end up in prison.
Right, and as you mentioned, doctors definitely have a concern, especially if they participate in Medicare and Medicaid, those systems as such. You mentioned that the Overcriminalization Work Group is transpartisan in nature. It has folks from all across the political spectrum. What draws people from the center-left, the center, from the right, to this working group?
Well, I think it's a recognition that the problems that we have at the federal level in particular in criminal justice are so profound that it's going to have to be something that any reform is going to require movement from a bipartisan or nonpartisan manner. Among other things, we need to reestablish the principles, the founding principles of criminal justice, because we've gotten to the place where many prosecutors, many elected officials believe that it's always better to be quote-unquote tough on crime than soft on crime. And that dichotomy is really a false dichotomy between being tough on crime and false on crime. It doesn't give us much guidance. It's not very nuanced. It's not very intelligent. It's not a great principle for deciding what should be a crime and what should not be a crime. And as I said today, we've gotten to the place where it's always viewed as being better to be tough on crime. And so we end up with more and more criminal laws that make it easier and easier for federal prosecutors to prosecute and convict people. And yet we don't have the same protections in the law itself that we used to have. So the groups across the political spectrum, they've recognized this, and they realize that at some level we need to get back to those principles of what the criminal law should be, much like we had more at the founding of this nation. And until we get to that spot, we're not going to have any meaningful criminal justice reform that will protect average Americans like you and me.
Now, with your rubber criminalization work group, it's been around for how many years now?
At least 5 or 6 years, probably close to a full decade. My predecessor, Paul Rosenzweig, my co-editor, was one of the leaders of the group before I joined Heritage about 5 years ago. So it's probably been close to a decade now.
Okay. And since the time that you've taken over, can you give us some ideas of some of the things that you've attempted to do and accomplished in terms of educational programs, educating the public, Congress, media events, things along those lines?
Mm-hmm. Well, Heritage is a think tank or a public policy institute, so one of the main functions is to publish papers and testify on Capitol Hill about different pieces of legislation or different ideas that members of Congress are considering. So we have published, in addition to the book that you mentioned, One Nation Under Arrest, we also published a major report last year called Without Intent that we did with the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers that analyzes Congress's process, the legislative process, and tries to understand how it is that Congress is cranking out so many bad criminal laws at the rate of about one each week for every week of the year. So we're getting, just in statutory code, we're getting about 55, 56 new crimes a year on average. So we wanted to understand how that was happening. We did a report on that with the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and we also recommended 5 reforms in that report. That report ended up being the framework for a hearing that was held in the House Crime Subcommittee last September on overcriminalization, and included witnesses that are both academics and former prosecutors, and a couple of victims of overcriminalization, including Bobby Unser, the former 3-time Indianapolis 500 winner, who was the victim of overcriminalization in Colorado at one point. So we've been publishing papers. We also have been giving staff briefings to members of Congress and their staff up on Capitol Hill about the fundamental principles of criminal justice, trying to remind them what those are. You would think that people would know that, but there really has been such poor and sloppy thinking about criminal justice and criminal law over the past several decades that many people need to be informed, even if they went to law school. The law schools don't do a good job of teaching what those fundamentals should be. And we have we've had staff briefings where there might be 30, 40, 50 members, I shouldn't say members of Congress, but the staff members who would be there. And we've had joint events that we do on Capitol Hill. Heritage is on Capitol Hill, and those are public events. And from there, we've had academic symposia at the different law schools, Georgetown Law Center, at the American University here in Washington. And those symposia have resulted in issues of their journals being published that are specifically on overcriminalization. So it's a wide range of work that we do. We spend a lot of time trying to educate Congress and help them understand why it is what they're doing is putting individuals at risk that should not be at risk.
Well, it's great work, Brian. Definitely appreciate what you're up to.
Well, thank you.
You talked about some work in the House. Are there champions in the House or in the Senate or both bodies who support these efforts to reform the legal system?
There have been. In the Senate, I can say that we have on different issues worked with a number of different senators. We've worked with Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, Senator Jim Webb from Virginia, Senator DeMint, Jim DeMint. We've worked with Senator Spector when he was still in the Senate and now has been replaced, of course, and others as well. And many of them have been interested on specific topics. We've worked with John Kyle from Arizona on some attorney-client privilege issues where the attorney-client privilege between an individual and his attorney was beginning to be eroded very severely by Justice Department policies. And we've worked with in the House, two of the leading members have been Bobby Scott from Virginia and Louis Gohmert from Texas. And they were the ones who convened the hearing and the hearing that we also had in 2009. So there have been two hearings there. But it's been a bipartisan effort, and we've been gratified to see that there are some members of Congress on both sides of the aisle who recognize the problems and are willing to do something about it.
That's great. You also co-wrote a book, One Nation Under Arrest, How Crazy Laws, Rogue Prosecutors, and Activist Judges Threaten Your Liberty. And I know, having attended your overcriminalization working group meetings, that there are a lot of really disturbing stories out there, which you hear and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe the federal government's going after that individual. Our doctor's sake and anyone else listening to this discussion, can you give us one or two examples that perhaps you have in your book or that you know elsewhere?
Sure. I'll talk about a couple of the witnesses who have testified before Congress. In September, a small businessman named Abby Schoenwetter from Florida was a Florida seafood importer and had been in business for about 12 years doing that and had a good relationship with different fishermen in the Caribbean, including this one particular fisherman from Honduras, and had bought a large number of shipments over the years from this fisherman. And his business, his shipments had always cleared customs without any problem whatsoever. They'd always cleared the U.S. Food and Drug Administration inspections that they would have on a routine basis. No problems whatsoever. But unfortunately for him, some U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agent or agents decided that they thought that one of the shipments violated a regulation of Honduras. And surprisingly enough, because of overcriminalization, the federal law criminalizes any violation of any fish or wildlife regulation or law of any nation on earth. So if your importer or your fisherman has unwittingly violated a standard in Honduras, you could end up being held liable for it. So Abby Schoenwetter was accused of his shipment being packed in clear plastic bags instead of cardboard boxes, and who knows why that was even a Honduran regulation. In fact, Honduras even certified that the regulation was not valid, had never been passed, but that made no difference to the U.S. prosecutors, and he ended up spending, he got sentenced to 8 years in prison, ended up spending seven of them in there before he got out on probation, and he came and testified a month after he got out on probation. But he had no idea. They never had to prove that he intended to do anything wrongful, and he indeed never intended to do anything wrongful. No criminal record on his part whatsoever. And it's just bizarre. I mean, when people hear these stories, it's hard for them to believe that this could actually happen in America. But when you create really broad laws like that, overly broad and vague, and they don't have a meaningful criminal intent requirement that requires the government to prove that you intended to violate the law or that you knew that what you're doing was unlawful, then it really is a very dangerous setup and makes it very easy for the prosecutors to get a conviction.
This is Michael Ostfink with The Medical Entrepreneur, a project of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And I'm speaking with Brian Walsh, Senior Legal Research Fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. He also runs the Overcriminalization Workgroup and is the author of One Nation Under Arrest, How Crazy Laws, Rogue Prosecutors, and Activist Judges Threaten Your Liberty. Brian, if our doctors are interested in getting involved in this issue, obviously if they want to learn more, they can visit your website, which is?
Overcriminalized.com. It's overcriminalized, so it's ED at the end, .com. And you can also find that website but off of theheritage.org, but I'd say it's probably easier just to go there. Or they can look up overcriminalization on Google, and they should be able to find overcriminalized.com. That would be a good place to start. They could also look on heritage.org for my work and just search under my name, and they could find a number of papers there, and that will kind of get them started.
Great. Well, Brian, thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck in your work, and we definitely look forward to working with you in the near and far future.